So we'll start off. Oh, time marches on, but not the recorder.
I guess it's going.
Okay, we think it's going. Okay, so we want to start off with our Sunday meetings, which we have here. The doors open at 10:30 in the morning, and the meetings are from 11 to 12 noon. And if you haven't got one of these, you may pick one up on your way out, because that gives us a whole schedule for the season, that every 3 months. So it's following under the basic theosophical principles. We are into November, and we are going to be this week talking about the foundation and law of brotherhood. Next Sunday, we will have a talk on evidence of reincarnation. Then, of course, on Wednesdays from 7:30 to 8:30, we have our class, our study class, and we are studying in the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. We also have references on the table of what the classes are for the season. And also on Wednesday, the reference library is open from 5:15 to 7:15. You may go in and read, or you can look up references if you might have. And usually for Wednesday night's class, there is a reference that's like a little icing on the cake for the subject matter. That's always available there to read over and add to what you have for your information for the class. So that takes care of our Sundays and Wednesdays. And also, we want to bring up the point about all the books and pamphlets that are available are all at cost of the making of them, and that all donations of any sort, whether it be time, service, or money, is always welcomed and greatly appreciated. And those may be brought up and talked to either the someone at the book table desk, or if they're making a donation and they wish to put it in the box on top of the pamphlets, that's also welcomed. So that takes care of our announcements. Other than, we'd like to read the Declaration, which has a tie-in in a way with today, because it's something that you will find read at every meeting or class throughout the world of all the lodges. So, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachments to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles. Through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of an aim, purpose, and teachings. Therefore, has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So we will start off with the idea of this, for the title for today, this foundation. We have collected a few quotes from HPB and Robert Crosby that deal with this. And it states with this idea of, where shall we find the true foundation for a changed civilization that all men and women can see and stand on? And that is true spiritual knowledge. We are going to have a league of humanity only when the ancient truths of the wisdom religions are once more perceived, when there is an one purpose and one teaching. Here we have an explanation of what we learn, and here we have the truth. Then we begin to tread that small old path that stretches far away, the path that our great predecessors, the masters, have trotted before us. To live for others is the foundation and basis of true spiritual knowledge. This was from Robert Crosby. So now we come up with the idea of the law of laws. If it is outside of man, it is not, nor is it outside the universe. It is within each one and the whole of the universe. Deity, we hear it mentioned often. We have the understanding from our teachings and from our lessons, the idea of that it is everywhere, visible or invisible, from every atom to the invisibleness of the cosmos. It is this mysterious power of evolution and involution, that omnipresent and giving out of an out and even omniness, creating its potentiality. In other words, we can see it, and yet there are parts of it that we can't see. But we can see where we can't see it and understand it. We can know what the potentiality could be if one would travel along that way. So the universe, as it says, being that infinitive, shall we say, information, that which has always existed, and nothing can be added to it, and nothing taken from it. Infinity has no dimensions, we are aware of that, no centers into other states, no centers, no circumstances. All we have and what we can see is the transformation of it in other states. The fact that man is able to observe the changes which are constantly taking place about himself in positive proof that his inner nature is constant. So the basic idea coming forward towards this idea of brotherhood is something that exists that has also a future of a deeper and higher meaning once we make that decision to work along that path. And it says, all investigations of the laws of the universe proves them to be absolute, changeless, and eternal. Once we start the study of the ancient teachings and we start to understand they all had the same basis to work from, and that it has lasted far beyond what even science feels that the thinking being has been here. And HPB has said, try to practice universal brotherhood, which is the universal duty of all humans, all humankind. Your real life is in your mind and in your thoughts. This is a truism. How we think, how we act, how we react, all goes back to what we feel within ourselves. And our thoughts express them. And then from there, we can let it ride through, let it in, and not stop it. Also, there is that occult axiom, as above, so below, there will always be those knowers, older, those who know, and those who need to know. And for most of us, as students of this philosophy, we are the need-to-knows. Sometimes when we're studying and reading through on any subject matter, we get to the point where I know this is true. I might not be able to express it or understand it to someone else, but I have that feeling within, this is true, whatever the situation has come up with, whatever we might have learned or not learned, as it says. So that inner soul that lives within us, that long marches of evolution, is ever becoming within it. There is the micro and there is the macro of evolution. To recognize that underlying unity between faraway cosmics and the nearness hand of the human relations, that gives us something to ponder on. Where in it do we feel the connection, the understanding of it? And why is it that we, as thinking human beings, are in a way carrying the burden of evolution, especially to our lower kingdoms, the intelligence within those? So it is law and order that governs the moral universe. And these ancient laws are available for us to read, ponder, and understand. And it says that it is that universal, that absolute, ever acting and never entering into other areas and functions otherwise or otherwhere. These are quotes from the Secret Doctrine from HPB. And what is true of the universe applies also to all beings in the universe. Deity is law, and vice versa. We wanted to mention that Theosophical Movement, Volume 13, has a vast series of parts to be read. These are called Studies in the SD, The Secret Doctrine by HPB. That volume is overwhelming to put everything so simply into a few terms. It is something we should all take a look at, and if not, use it for our basis for study. And it is a point where it gets into that the self, the capital self, that real unchanging knowing perceiver within us. And it's only by perceiving and serving that self within, which is in all beings, can brotherhood among all ever be realized. The foundation, which is a bond of unity and uniting all man and all beings and all things in the entire universe into one grand whole. So there is a beginning and an end to understanding this. The next thing is to be able to live it and express it. So now we're going to look at the fact of just exactly what are we talking about when we're talking about brotherhood.
We just want to start out a short quote that we found. We're sorry that we can't remember where we got it, didn't write it down. But it's something to really even meditate upon and just to keep in your mind during this whole class. Brotherhood or spiritual evolution is the conscious or unconscious effort to carry out the purpose of the whole of nature, the individual response to the universal urge. So one of the things is like, what is this universal urge? And that could be something that we can kind of bring up maybe during the questions or just ponder upon. But the declaration was read, and what we did kind of read it for newcomers, of course, but also the declaration is a declaration upon universal brotherhood. And it talks about that as theosophists, this is the basis of union for us. The aim, purpose, and teaching. But the thing that we're trying to do is disseminate the idea in the furtherance of unity. That our whole focus can be, what is it that unites us all? What is it that we can look at in our neighbor and in ourselves that can be the same, so that if we hurt one, we hurt all? So, as was said in the first talk, the basis for universal brotherhood can be found in deity. And it is not an anthropomorphic idea. For one thing, the deific essence cannot be described. It cannot be limited. It just is. So how is it then that something so all-encompassing, how can that be a concern for us if it has no limits? And we are told not to pray to an outside deity. We are to look inward at that deific essence that is within us. So this idea of deity is what unites us all. Everything is unified. If we look at manifestation as an aspect from that deific essence, not an aspect of it, it does not manifest. All manifestation comes from it. And we look at all the compounds in nature, from stars to atoms, the highest elder brothers to the smallest atom as well. And it can be applied to our spiritual, intellectual, and physical world. This is the one fundamental law of occult science. So from this idea then of deity, we can look at these principles as the law of karma and reincarnation. But there's also an aspect to that of unity and causation. That how we cause, how we act, can either put forth this idea of unity or force it backwards. And these are almost like a chain, these few ideas of unity and causation, human solidarity, and karma and reincarnation, because they all work together. And when we look at the idea of karma again, they're also involved with it are these the idea of cycles and of sacrifice and compassion. Because our karmic manifestations in the future are dependent upon the sacrifice or lack of, and compassion or lack of it. And this will cause our karmic trail, so to speak, and that can be for good or bad. So as these cycles that we speak of a lot in our classes, as these cycles progress, cosmically we're looking at the birth and death of planets and suns and stars. With humans, we're looking at the idea of waking and sleeping, life and death, young and old. So as these cycles go on, karmically, we will either stay, as we can say, asleep during that particular cycle, or we can be awake according to our karmic life, according to the karmic results of what we've done. So we can either be a builder, a preserver, or a one who destructs or regenerates, because karmically we bring these things forward. And how we act with others, we can build somebody up, we can help them maintain their lives, we can just support them, or we can be mean and we can destruct what little maybe self-esteem a person would have. Or we can help regenerate. We see this on the news of people helping each other all the time. So through our lives then, we have either taken in certain aspects that will determine our karmic actions. And again, these are always entwined with others. And it doesn't have to be people. It can be the lower kingdoms. In regards to the earth is, we were talking in class on Wednesday, the earth is an entity. It is not a globular piece of dirt. It has lives. Those lives you know, when we talk about the macrocosm and the microcosm, we affect the earth with what we put out with our emotions, with our thoughts. We affect everything. So it's since we affect and we are affected by others cycle after cycle, this is what turns into true brotherhood. And true brotherhood is a love for all. We hear groups talking about the brotherhood that they have, but many times it's if you're not a member of that group, the brotherhood just stays right there. It's not encompassing. The idea is to love all. Now, we talk about it here, and the expectation is to take what we learn here out into the community, whether that community is our family, our friends, the person we meet on the street, the cashier in the store. So this idea of brotherhood, I mean, it is so all-encompassing because we're talking about our karmic trail that has gone back for eons, for, you know, centuries, that we are bringing these ideas forward into our lives and how we are going to affect the all. So it's the idea of that deific essence in us, in our neighbor, in that poor homeless dog or cat out on the street, the rainforests. It depends on where in your scheme of evolution will that idea of brotherhood lie. Because all of these kingdoms will at some point in time be raised up, but they have to be raised up by us. So we are dynamos, Mr. Judge says. So we can affect so much of who and what we come in contact with. Mr. Judge, he has a wonderful article called "Am I My Brother's Keeper?" And he says, he learns to do good, and that which appears the wisest at the time, forgetting self so fully that he only knows his doing good to others, forgetting self so far that he forgets to think whether he is doing his duty or not, entering nirvana to this extent that he does not remember that he is doing his duty. That for him is duty. So our duty is what comes to us. And if that, and chances are that duty is going to have something to do with brotherhood. Because what comes to us is brotherhood. Because for us to do our duty and to do it with the right frame of mind, the right motive, can affect and just spill out of us and affect everything around us. So to end, karma's reaction to negative thoughts, action is to balance that inequality. So even if we just think something negative, we don't have to put it into action. Just thinking it can set up an unequal balance in the universe. So the response of acting morally is one way of creating the harmony of universal brotherhood. In the back?
We recall one piece of advice we received here that made all of this potential action more possible. Being told to love everyone, we knew that we didn't even like everyone, including some in our own family. So how do we move from there to universal brotherhood? And the answer was, oh, you don't have to like everyone. You have to treat everyone as you would treat the one you did like.
So it's interesting because we hear that in some 12-step programs have used that. You don't have to like anybody. But this idea of love and knowing that this person is going through, you know, their karmic lessons just as we are, that they also are part of that deific essence. I mean, that we need to look at with love because we're all doing it together. You had your hand up.
Just as an aside, and probably whatever it is you don't like about the other person is probably, you know, dwelling within you, and if you fix it, you probably overcome that. Nevertheless, the first speaker mentioned the law of laws, and we're not sure if it came out. Could we explain or talk about what the law of law is and then how it relates to the brotherhood?
The law of laws, we could say... is brought out, is that of deity. That deific principle that's within us, that's within all of us. And down to, as it says, the lower kingdoms. That consciousness we have, that self-consciousness, but the consciousness that's in the mineral, that's in the vegetable, that's in the animal, there is consciousness, there is intelligence there, but there's not self-knowledge, self-intelligence. It's instinctually within that family, whether it be that of the minerals or the animal or the plants. Yes?
Along that line, in the voice of the silence, it speaks of that aspect of deity, which is the law of laws, is compassion. But it says it's not a human attribute. So what is compassion in that universal sense, that law of laws, if it's not a human attribute?
We would say it is a universal aspect. It's within the universe. It's something we can see and maybe no, but the fact is we can attach ourselves to it and have pieces of it expressed through us.
And our understanding of compassion is that it's one of those powers of the soul that we have to, as was said, tap into it. We have to be able to open up our minds and make it porous for that compassionate energy from the soul to come through. It's not something that everybody has every day. We get little sparks of it periodically, but it's one of the powers of the soul.
We have always thought of those years when the first clock was put together. It took time, and the British government gave special privileges, compassion, to those working on the clock. And when it was finished, the government took charge. It didn't get put into use until it had been proven. We use the term working our clockwork when we speak of brotherhood. Now all we have to do is consider the ideas involved and the human effort that took to make those first operating clocks. And if we go from there, then it's just a leap forward to apply that same thinking to the relationship of brotherhood, even among the lower animals. that other words will come to our mind. Mm-hmm. Everything works like clockwork.
Well, that certainly is a goal, is for everything to work like clockwork. But the effort that so many people have put into not only the development of the clock, which is something we can't live without now, many of us, just the effort that we have seen, HPB and Mr. Judge, the effort to the detriment of their physicality, of spreading these ideas throughout the world, putting everything down in writing. So it's something that we have to be thankful for. But in history, you know, there are, in just humanity in general, there are so many examples of people just, you know, putting out the effort, doing their duty. So it's, you know, it's something that we can aspire to. Yes?
Well, it came out earlier in the discussion that the law of laws is mentioned in the Voice of the Silence as compassion, and it was also mentioned by the speaker that it's a power of the soul. And we've heard that compassion is the ability to identify with someone else's suffering and actually feel the suffering so that it puts you in a position to better help that person. So that would be, it seems, you know, necessary for universal brotherhood to be on the physical plane. Compassion has to, you know, we have to have access to it. But what was said was, like, once in a while we get sparks of it. It almost sounds like somebody sends it to us once in a while. Rather, is there a way that a human being can cultivate compassion within himself and develop it or do something so that he has access to it?
Is there a way that we can cultivate compassion? Well, just the idea, what needs to be done is the mind to be more open to the movement of what their higher, what each person's higher nature is trying to put through. So it's not like an outside God that's giving us the compassion. We are trying to access it from our own individual higher nature. So how can we do that? Well, for one thing, being aware that we have a higher nature. And then how do we go about accessing it? Well, we've spoken a little bit today on duty, doing what comes to us, not worrying. The Gita talks about doing what you have to do and not being worried about the results of your action, but just doing it because it's something that has to be done. Again, it's your motive. If you're doing something because, you know, your mom told you to, and it's like, oh, do I have to, kind of a thing. No, we have to do it because it's, you know, that's what it is we have to do. We talk about meditation, trying to focus on higher thoughts. That can make our minds porous. We have quite a few meditation books out at the book table that we can read on a regular basis to help us clear our minds of more material issues. We don't want to blank our minds out because that's a passive state. But if we're going to stop thinking about materialistic issues, then we have to replace that with higher thoughts, and we can certainly find those things in some of our books. And then just doing it. We see somebody who needs some help, and just and that the word compassion is with passion. So try and do it with, you know, an emotional, positive type of passion. Yes.
Vigor.
I'm sorry.
We've noticed the human tendency when we see someone do something despicable, to judge the act, and to isolate ourselves, to cast them out, to isolate themselves from ourselves, to judge the act in that sense. Well, that's the opposite of compassion.
Right.
But if we do witness something performed by another that, from our judgment, seems to be wrong, how can we respond to it? What do we focus on instead of focusing on the outer act? What can we focus on about them and about ourselves that will help them us get closer to them or in sympathy with them rather than draw back and isolate themselves?
Well, on some point, we have to put ourselves out a little. We have to try to reach out to that individual and make them aware of how that action is coming across to not only that person and the one they're acting to, but those all around him. Some people have a knack to be able to do that, to say, hey, wait a minute. Do you see what you're doing here? And it's like, it does take guts in a way to sometimes open your mouth in a situation rather than just observe it and then pull away from it and walk down the other way. Either you're going to be the type of individual that understands what it means to live harmoniously with balance in your life and not be afraid maybe to say something about it. Way in the back.
Just that another way of looking at the law of laws is periodicity or karma. Every action gets its reaction. And that's the way we really learn compassion. We go through an experience and then we know what it feels like to be treated that way or to suffer that indignity. And we could probably never do it again because we know how someone else would feel. So really, karma is our great teacher in compassion.
And just when we see one of those actions happen that we find as being horrific, the person who has committed it, if we can pull back from the emotional ties to whatever it is that happened and think about karmically, like we can't determine karmically what exactly has happened that brought this person to this situation, but we know that karma did have an effect on that person committing the act, as well as bringing the people that it happened to the situation. But that doesn't mean emotionally we should just say, well, that's their karma that they were there. We can't say that. But there has to be an emotional attachment to it. But just by knowing about karma and reincarnation, we think might be able to take the intensity out. That's a really tough question.
It's hard.
Yes.
Well, from all that we've been talking about this morning, is that this deity is consciousness, and we are consciousness, and therefore the universe is consciousness. So everything is alive.
Right.
Everything. So that's how we're all connected. That's why we're all it's a brotherhood. So in our daily life, I think the Gita says that we are the creators of our universe by how we think, act, and do. And you know, in this moment, and we create our future. So this attachment we have for understanding and knowing and this is something that we have to maybe just give up the attachment to know. And just know. And just live I think the Gita says that, you know, live so that you are not looking for a reward for mm-hmm. what you are doing, and that you are trying to be single-minded and live in the moment, always living in the moment. And if everything is alive and we are in cooperation with nature, I think that's compassion.
You could say, in a way, it is. But the fact of the matter is, for some people to acknowledge that within themselves, it might be very difficult because of their background or how they were brought up or what they were brought up with. And it's like a true awakening that happens, but it's like somehow this personality, this form that we're working within in this lifetime, has from previous lifetimes ended up the way we are now, the situations that we're in. We have brought them to ourselves. In that case, there are parts of us that can acknowledge this, and there are other parts that just don't even have the desire. So you can't force feed anything to an individual, but there comes a point if one is questioning what life is all about and what we're all here for, and if he really starts questioning and looking, that individual is going to find something that he can hold on to and understand and have it become part of his nature. That's a whole change to this personality. We have to remember there is two of us way inside. There's the good little angel and there's the bad little devil. We have that combination all the time, and we have to get to the point where we can say, I can stand in the middle and make the decision how I want to go. I don't have to let these little icons take over my life. Yes.
Several times the idea of reincarnation was brought up in terms of understanding how we brought forth karma from the past, our present situation. But from a point of view of brotherhood and compassion, we also need to apply reincarnation in understanding that we're working for the future. Sure. Mm-hmm. The fruits of our compassionate acts may not show themselves in this life because of the cycle we're in. But just as we're building for a better future for ourselves, we're building for a better humanity in the future when the results of all these actions can come forth under better circumstances. Mm.
That's where the idea of the cycles comes in and works along with karma, because depending upon what cycle of evolution will be coming up, it might be appropriate or inappropriate for that particular karmic manifestation occur in that particular cycle, because karma isn't just like what happens in this life happens in the next. It's like there's different kinds of karma that are being held at bay that will happen in a future manifestation. And you had your hand up.
Yeah, we were thinking about brotherhood in relation to the deity and to law, of course. But then we were thinking about the third fundamental, about evolution, which is the pivotal doctrine. Mm-hmm. And we were thinking specifically about when there's a peace accord, such as there was between the government of Northern Ireland and the Catholics, the Protestants and Catholics, on Good Friday. I think it was in the late 90s, and it seems to have held, you know, for the last 20 years. And there was so much animosity, but there were those that had a change of heart that were virulently against the other group, but they came together and they truly had a change of heart. So we see a pivotal doctrine there where that's how evolution, through brotherhood, evolution advances, and through dissension and wars and whatnot, it's held in abeyance or even goes backwards somewhat.
The idea of evolution and brotherhood certainly go hand in hand. Brotherhood, in many respects, can be a catalyst for somebody's evolutionary journey. The pivotal doctrine states that we have to make our own decisions. It's not just going to be given to us, as we see in some of the Christian religions, that because you believe in an outside deity, you will be given the grace to wipe away your sins. The pivotal doctrine states that we have to do it on our own, and that's where the idea of karma comes in. So brotherhood then will determine how we will evolve. If we're going to work with brotherhood or work against it.
Way in the back.
Although we may not have an accord to work out in a massive way that way, we do have plenty of opportunities in our ordinary life. In the key, HPB says, for every flower you plant in another's garden, weeds will disappear in your own. And we think that's important to remember. The least little thing I do that is kind not just benefits the other, but truly in a deep way benefits me.
But that is a wonderful saying, and it's nice to know that can happen, but that can't be the motive for why we're doing something for somebody else, is so that we will reap a benefit. But it's nice to know that that can happen. Mm-hmm. But we need to do our duty with the right motive. Yes.
So is not that duty cooperation? That ultimately what we see is cooperation to all the kingdoms of nature. And it's a progression toward higher states of consciousness from the mineral, well, even from the unseen kingdoms, that the kingdoms that we cannot see, and the mineral and the vegetable, they all have states of consciousness. And we just see a natural progression. So we are standing here responsible for that all below us. And we've gotten here through cooperation
and
sacrifice.
We can see, if we look at the world today, let's just look at the United States today about this progression and how nature is trying very hard to send us messages. Look at the fires. Look at the floods. Look at all the disasters we've been having. It's like nature's trying to get us to pull together instead of spreading out. And I think also now we see it worldwide. There's so much evilness going around and looseness of authority. People are just going crazy with it. You can't really watch the news at night without being swayed and turned one way, left or right. How much the killing of young children is going on, not just here, but quite heavily here, but in other countries too. Everything is sort of topsy-turvy now, and it's getting to the point where there's going to be a change. But in the meantime, have we not seen true, beautiful brotherhood, humanity of all these people that have gone out to help, just to go and help, just whatever little thing they can do, whether it's physical things that are being done, whether it's purchasing cases and cases of water and having it sent to certain areas, and the youth. The youth of here in the United States is what's so overwhelming when you see so many young kids, children, that are having a way of showing adults this is the way we should act. That give and take, it's natural in them. They're not tainted yet. They're just giving because they can help. They can do this. And they don't want a pat on the shoulder or an announcement in a paper. They just know, I can help. I can do this. And they're actually doing it. It makes you feel, in a way, the youth will make the difference in humanity in the way we act. If we look and see with all the killings and deaths and physical things that are happening all over this globe, there is that shining light here and there just bubbling up because there are those who can do something and they're doing it.
We have to remember that we're in what's called the Kali Yuga age, which is the dark age. It's very dense. It's very materialistic. But we're also told that whatever good we do will come back, what is it, threefold, fourfold. So we have a better chance of moving along our spiritual path by trying to overcome all the materialistic and awful things that we see, and by trying to just do as good as we can in this age, we can affect a quicker change, but we have more opportunities to do that. Just one last quick comment.
Well, then to bring it around to full circle to that initial quote by Robert Crosby, you mentioned the horrible and wonderful things we observed in humanity recently. That shows that humanity has the potential. The next step is learning to do it without having to experience the suffering, not just to respond to it. And that's where the knowledge is important. The only way we can become proactive and do it in spite of the difficult circumstances is the knowledge of who and what we are.
Thank you. True. We can imagine a better world. Again, we've had it in times before. Oh.
And there's your lead-in.
Oh, all right. This is what we'd like to close with. It's called Imagination. It was written by a gentleman, well-known, John Lennon from the Beatles. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there are no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion, too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. That's what brotherhood can be.
Our meeting is over.